This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Victims of crime are asking the federal government to review the Victims' Bill of Rights introduced in 2015. Concerns about the parole process are top of mind for advocates. Michelle McQuigg is the weekend news editor with the Canadian Press, and she joins us now with more. Hey, good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Dave.
So, Michelle, let's start by going back in time to 2015. In broad terms, what was the Victims' Bill of Rights meant to address?
Sure. What it was meant to do was basically build an additional support for victims of crime at every stage of the justice system. So now victims can get assistance through trials, for instance, if they have to offer testimony. It builds in some rights in terms of being notified when suspects are being released back into the community, when parole hearings are happening, at least in theory. And this is where the story comes in. It all emerged last weekend with a staffer that I was supervising, getting really fascinated by a very specific case, a poster child for a victim of crime. If I may, I'm going to divert really
please,
quick
and please.
Just do a quick summary, because this is a crazy story. This is a gentleman from Newfoundland who came home when he was about 19 to find his mother stabbed 53 times. He was ultimately convicted of her homicide, and it emerged several years later that it was his childhood friend who did it. Not only did it, but let him go to jail and rot there for a while. So now he, of course, is the primary victim whenever this old childhood friend comes up for parole. And this is where there is a growing hue and cry about the ways the Victims' Bill of Rights has not necessarily kept pace with some of the issues that they face after the trials are over.
So can you describe a little bit about what that process is like for this victim having to go through this parole process on so many times? Can you provide a couple of examples of what the process has been like?
Sure. Yeah. He's gone through it now four times over the course of this guy's incarceration. And most recently, it was about his day parole. So the guy served his time. He was released on day parole. And a few weeks ago, Greg Parsons, that's the wrongfully convicted man whose mother was killed, got a call a few weeks ago saying, hey, the guy who killed your mom is exhibiting some worrisome behavior. We're going to review his day parole. Can you give another statement in a couple of weeks? And this touched off a whole wave of emotions for him. And apparently this is quite common with those who have to testify after traumatic incidents like this. So he had a couple of weeks to prepare yet another impact statement. It unearthed a whole lot of PTSD for him. He was a total wreck. He said he couldn't go into work. He got it done. He gave the statement and the guy's day parole was revoked. But Greg Parsons is now facing the prospect of going back and doing this all over again in 3 months.
Michelle, let's go back to the Victims' Bill of Rights. When was it supposed to be reviewed?
In 2020, specifically, there was, or by 5 years anyway, it was enacted in 2015, like you said, and the government had 5 years to enact a committee to specifically to look at the parole issues. That has not happened, and I'm sure COVID might have played a role in part of that, but that was right at the end of the time frame, and there just has not been any action. So now there's a growing push from victims of homicide, related to victims of homicide, to try to get them to take up that cause again and revisit it and add a lot of strengthening measures. They're saying that the bill itself is a good start, but there's a lot that needs to be done specifically for the parole process.
So what would advocates like to be addressed in that review when it comes to parole?
They'd like some more mental health supports, for sure. That kind of stuff exists at the trial level, like I said, but not beyond that. And there's a whole lot that they need to work through. They'd like to have some education perspective for a lot of people who are going to start navigating the system for the first time. They feel it would be helpful to have some guidance as to what one can reasonably expect of the parole system and how it actually works, and just get some coaching of how, you know, what's going to be expected of them and what they can expect in return. Another aspect that some of them really want is automatic notifications of parole hearings. You have to opt in for that kind of thing currently. And things, apparently they're plenty of cases where that falls through the cracks or it can be gotten around and whatnot. And they're calling for stronger teeth for that sort of thing. I think they'd prefer to see more of an opt-out kind of process because some people don't want to be notified, but many, many do. They say that they feel they have an obligation to put themselves through this as almost a form of justice in a sense, but also a bit of a tribute to the loved one they lost.
What has the government had to say in response to this action? I believe it's 1,500 signatures currently asking the government to go forward with this review.
So far, yeah. And remember, this is not a huge subsection of the population, right?
People
who have been victimized by homicide. The government honestly hasn't said very much. They say this is forming this kind of review is the sole discretion of Parliament. Parliament will come back and say we're working collaboratively with other levels of government. So not a lot of action or evidence of action, just the usual rhetoric about wanting to support victims in any way they can.
Michelle, you know what blew me away a little bit in reading about this issue, specifically coming back to this Greg Parsons story in regards—
Was it Sarah's writing?
Yeah, the story's wild, right? And you can tell that this would have such a huge impact on him. And then as you start thinking about the specifics in regards to what he has to do in regards to these parole hearings, that it stands to reason, yes, you have to give a victim statement. But then to say that we're going to review this again in 90 days and you have to give us a fresh victim statement, it almost makes me wonder why there can't be some kind of archive of victim statements that must be read, but not necessarily by the victim at these hearings.
That's a great point. And I don't know, actually, if that came up in Sarah Smellie, our Newfoundland correspondent, has done tremendous work on this case. And she's the one who wrote the story we're discussing right now. I don't know if that's come up, but absolutely, the short time frame is a real concern for Greg Parsons. He told her quite candidly about how he was a real wreck leading up to the hearing around his former friend's day parole hearing, and the prospect of doing it again. He said he already knows what the process is going to be like for him. He knows it's going to bring it all back. He knows he's going to have to miss at least a bit of work because he's going to be fall apart again. So this is part of it. There's a real seesaw that these people have to go through if they're determined to give these statements. And like I said, many of them feel that they really have to.
Yeah.
As a sort of last act for the loved one that was killed.
Yeah, as simply a matter of support and honoring the memory, for sure. Hey, Michelle,
And to ensure that justice is served in a lot of cases.
Absolutely, for sure. Michelle, this was a really interesting story, one that flew a little bit under the radar. So thank you for highlighting it for me yesterday to bring to the table this morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.